from KQED.
Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and we're now going to turn our attention to foreign policy. On Saturday, Russia announced it would pull out of the landmark 1987 Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, mirroring the U.S.'s announced withdrawal the day before. We're going to talk about the global and national security implications of the treaty suspension, and we're also going to discuss the mounting tension between the White House and the nation's intelligence agencies after President Trump dismissed key findings in the worldwide threat assessment and called intelligence leadership passive and naive. Joining us to analyze these issues is Michael McFaul, director of the Freeman Spokley Institute for International Studies at Stanford. He's also former U.S. ambassador to Russia. Latest book is called From Cold War to Hot Peace. And welcome back to the program, Michael McFaul.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Also good to have Josh Meyer with us this segment. He's national security reporter who has written for Political, Time, NBC News, and the L.A. Times. And Josh, good to have you as well. Thank you for joining us.
Good to be here.
Good to have you. Let me begin, if I may, with you, Michael McFaul. Let's begin by talking about what this means that the 1987 treaty seems to be at an impasse and likely it's going to be scrapped at this point, although is there a possibility of salvaging it?
Oh, I think it's highly unlikely that there's a possibility of salvaging it. The Trump administration doesn't want a part of it. They want to deploy these missiles. I think it's important to understand, first and foremost, against China. And the fact that Russia was violating the treaty, and I think the evidence for that is fairly overwhelming.
Excuse me, that goes back to the Obama administration, which you served in, doesn't it?
Yes, and there was evidence of that back then. Now the Russians have disputed that, I think it's important to say. And they even challenged us to come look at the missile and, you know, interact with it. But I didn't see much enthusiasm from that from the Trump administration to do so, because I think they were looking for an excuse to get out of this treaty.
Well, what does this mean in general from your perspective, Michael McFaul, as far as treaties? I mean, Iran is saying this shows that you can't trust the United States. They'll back out of treaties. And to some extent, there may be something to think about there.
Well, I would say two things. First of all, I just don't understand why it's in America's national interest to pull out of the INF treaty. It was a fantastic treaty for the United States to sign when Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev signed it, because it advantaged us, right? Our advantage, we have sea-based missiles, air-based missiles of this range, lots of them compared to the Russians, and eliminating them on the ground was a big advantage to us. And I just think we need to think about our national security interests and those of our allies when making these decisions. And secondly, I just think it's going to lead to an arms race vis-a-vis the Russians and vis-a-vis the Chinese, especially in Asia. I was just in Japan a few days ago talking about the China threat, and we have almost little, zero treaties regulating arms control or even providing transparency with respect to weapons in Asia. And this just, to me, is another step towards an arms race. And that's just not, I don't think that serves America's national interests.
And what does it mean, Josh Meyer, do you think about the START treaty?
Well, I mean, I think it's a bad sign for numerous treaties. And it also underscores a couple of bigger points, which is, so for START, I think that it's a really bad sign. And I think it's in trouble. But it also shows that, you know, at the same time, President Trump is saying we want to get along with Russia and be friends with them. This was one of the best examples, I think, of a bilateral treaty that everybody thought was in the best interest of both countries in the world, and that was doing very well, as Ambassador McCall said, for decades. But it also shows that, you know, Trump, at the same time, he's saying that he doesn't believe his intelligence community about various things. They're the ones that are observing that Russia is likely violating the treaty and the dangers of that. So he can't really have it both ways. He can't trust the community when it's expedient for him, and then trash them on Twitter and elsewhere when he decides he doesn't like what they're saying.
Don't we see the fingerprints here, though, of Pompeo and Bolton, largely?
I think so, yeah. You know, and Trump said over the weekend that he doesn't believe his intelligence community on many of these big-ticket issues. He just follows his gut, or he follows his own counsel or his own advisors. But I'm not sure who they are. I mean, Pompeo is essentially sitting at the top of the intelligence structure, first at the CIA, now at the State Department. So it's all part of the same picture, I think.
But you've got, let me go follow through on that a bit with you, Josh, because you've got three of all Trump appointees of the major intelligence agencies who President Trump says belong back in kindergarten. They don't know what they're talking about on major issues having to do with the United States threats. And there's nothing in there, of course, about climate change.
Right, right. I mean, I think that that was remarkable. And I think that a lot of the details are still coming out now in terms of exactly how much he is on a different planet, I think, than his intelligence community on Iran, on Iraq, on Venezuela, for instance, on North Korea, on pretty much everything across the board. A former Obama administration official, Colin Call, did a long Twitter thread about exactly how, when you get down into the weeds, it is really dangerous for Trump to be saying this and disregarding the intelligence community's assessments about all of these issues.
And it's certainly bad for the morale of the intelligence agencies and those who work there. I want to go back to you, though, Michael McFaul, on the treaty, the missile treaty. There are real security concerns in Europe, despite the fact that NATO supports the president here, don't they?
Well, that's right, and I give credit to the Trump administration for getting that NATO statement. I was surprised that they got that. But remember, these are missiles that if the Russians choose to deploy now, because they, of course, as you said, have stepped out of the treaty as well, these are missiles that will be pointed at Europe, not the United States. And if we choose to try to deploy ground-based intermediate for missiles in Europe, I think we're going to have a real hard time finding countries that want to be targets, right? Who's going to want to host these missiles? And I think people forget why we signed this treaty in the first place. Sometimes it would be good to go back and remember the history. The main reason was that by having these missiles in place, right, when we were building them up in the 80s, it shortened the amount of time that decision makers had in order to decide whether to launch nuclear weapons or not. And everybody agreed that that was destabilizing for strategic stability or mutual assured destruction, right? Especially because information's not perfect. And it was better to have more of a lag time so that we would use ICBMs or bombers or sea-launched missiles, right? We are now, if there's deployments, and that's a big if, we don't know that for sure, but if there are new deployments, that means the time for decision-makers to decide whether or not to launch a nuclear weapon shortens, and that's just not good for our security.
And Josh Meyer, you heard Ambassador McFaul say that this really represents the likelihood of a new arms race and maybe is aimed at China?
I think it is for sure, but I think it's spreading. It's a problem that's being created around the world. I think in the Middle East, for instance, we've tried very hard for several decades now to make it a nuclear-free zone there in the Middle East, with the exception of Israel. But I think now you're seeing Saudi Arabia, other countries saying that they want nukes too to protect themselves. And I think that it's a problem. And I think, you know, China, of course, is a huge part of this. If the Trump administration continues to be as confusing and contradictory to its own statements, you know, from one day or week or month to another, it's very hard to get a good bead on what's going to happen with that. And I think, as the ambassador said, ballistic missiles is also a hugely undercovered topic, but I think that that's something that's of a great concern too. I mean, there's a lot less likelihood that we're going to throw a nuclear missile, but the ballistic missile treaties are very important as well.
There's also been a major buildup, and let me touch on this with you, Michael McFaul, in nuclear weapons, and talking not only about the United States and Russia, but really much globally. What's of concern here, and there's great irony to this, because the expense the United States is putting forward really goes way beyond the expense of a wall and all of that, but we're moving into not only another arms race, but revivifying, in effect, the weapons we already have.
Well, yeah, I'd make two points on that. One is, remember the deal with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty that many countries have signed up to was that they would not develop nuclear weapons if we, those nuclear powers that signed the NPT, would reduce our nuclear weapons. That's the fundamental deal. And so if we now are choosing to move away from arms control, first with this treaty, and then I think even more horrifically, if the the Trump administration does not extend the New START treaty, then, you know, I think that we're back into a very scary world where there's little incentive or little obligation for other countries to move in that direction and to not build nuclear weapons. That's number one. And then number two, you know, the good news compared to the Cold War is that on the quantitative side, arms control treaties, including the New START treaty, has helped to reduce the number of nuclear weapons, right? And in the New START treaty, it's down to 1550. That's still a lot of nuclear weapons, by the way. You can still blow up the world with that number. But we were moving in the right direction. We were moving down from the peaks in the Cold War. But there is a qualitative nuclear arms race for sure. The Russians have invested in their modernization. We've invested in our modernization. And on the defensive side as well, there's no controls with respect to defensive missile systems. And so you see, you know, a proliferation and an escalation and an expansion of those systems in the United States and in Russia.
Well, if you, our listeners, have some thoughts about this, we'd like to hear from you. The United States pulling out of a major nuclear arms control treaty with Russia. We're also talking about intelligence and the reports that have come out from intelligence agencies and the contradicting of them that came from the Trump administration. If you'd like to comment on either of those major stories, we want to hear from you. If you have questions about either of them as well, we also welcome your involvement in the program, and you can join us now at our toll-free number. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Please feel free to join the program. Again, the number for your calls, 866-733-6786. Also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle, is @KQEDForum, or go to our Facebook page, and we're going to go to your calls and emails right away here. Let me go back first, though, to you, Josh Meyer, and talk a bit about how the Trump administration has actually blamed the media for misrepresenting what the intelligence community said, or didn't say, for that matter.
Right, exactly. You know, as journalists, we are supposed to be objective. I mean, we are objective and trying to be fair and balanced about all of these issues. But this one was kind of hard to stomach, I think, because what Trump was saying was, I was speaking, or these people were testifying live at a congressional hearing, speaking right to the public, you know, through their own sworn testimony, and that the media has somehow twisted that around so that the American public isn't getting an accurate picture of what's happening, and that somehow the media is being disingenuous about that. So I think you saw a lot of reporters, I believe I did as well, you know, tweeting and noting that that was the case, that this was not, you couldn't really say by any stretch that this was the media doing it. But one thing that I wanted to just briefly say, to step back for a second for what we were talking about before, is, you know, Trump's underlying reason for all of the things he said, you know, in furtherance of a relationship with Putin and with Russia, was so that we could make the world a better place and have a better relationship with them, and by inference have some leverage over them. So if that's the case, you know, I think that withdrawing from this treaty is a really good example of how that isn't the case. I mean, it doesn't seem like he's being able to talk Putin into adhering to a very, very important treaty. And that is a bad sign of their broader relationship, I think, or lack of one.
Well, we don't know really what the nature of their relationship is, as we found out in Helsinki and in Buenos Aires. Josh Meyer, again, is national security reporter who has written for Political Time, NBC News, and the LA Times. And former ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul, also with us, is now director of the Friedman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford. And his newest book is called From Cold War to Hot Peace. Here's a kind of scary tweet, Michael McFaul, from a listener named Scott, who says, is it possible that the pullout from this medium-range treaty creates the perfect conditions for the mythical Pearl Harbor disaster an administration on the ropes might just be hoping for?
Oh, I don't know about that. But it's just destabilizing. I mean, to go back to what I said before, we do not want to shorten the amount of time that decision makers have with respect to pulling a trigger that would lead to that kind of catastrophe. We want to lengthen the time. And I think that core reason for signing the treaty in the first place is still valid today in the 21st century. And you know, it's also a broader thing, if I could just add to it. You know, I call it the Trump withdrawal doctrine. If you look across what he's done over the last 2 years in foreign policy, he basically just withdraws from treaties, and you know, whether it's the Paris climate Accords or the Iran nuclear deal or the Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP, and now the INF Treaty, and it looks like they're teeing up to withdraw from the New START Treaty. And, you know, I believe there was a logic to why other presidents, by the way, Democrats and Republicans, I just like to underscore the fact that it was Ronald Reagan who signed the INF Treaty, without any explanation for how America is better served by doing this. And I think in the long term, there's another set of negative consequences, is that we no longer look like a leader in the world. And when we don't, that creates a vacuum, and I think that creates the permissive conditions for countries like China and Russia to fill that vacuum.
There's also another serious concern here that I think needs to be raised, and I'm going to go to you on this, Josh Meyer, and that is when the intelligence agencies are saying one thing and the President of the United States is saying something contradictory to the intelligence agencies, it not only puts a good deal of pressure on the intelligence agencies in terms of morale that I alluded to before, but it also puts them in a pretty difficult kind of quandary where maybe they're going to be compelled in the future to say things to fit into what they think is going to please the president and not necessarily work in their own autonomous way. Having said that, however, the same intelligence agencies were the ones that told us that we should go into Iraq, that we had to do that because of weapons of mass destruction.
Right, and they'll be paying for that for a very, very long time. But the one thing that I always return to is the reason Langley, the CIA headquarters, is in Virginia is that that was done on purpose because they wanted to make a statement that they are not a policymaking agency. They're not part of, you know, the political part of the administration. They are supposed to be they're supposed to be standing alone, operating independently and offering, you know, straight information that the policymakers can take and decide what they want to do with the various options. And I think that they are not going to be rolling over and just trying to offer up what they think the president wants to hear. You may remember that the fight to get Gina Haspel installed as the director was a very, very bitter one, and a lot of former CIA people that had never gone public before came out and said that they really wanted her for that job. And the reason was they wanted to make sure that it wasn't politicized. So when they see Trump calling in the director of national intelligence, Dan Coats, and Gina Haspel into a photo op at the White House at his desk in the Oval Office, and then he says, you know, that they agree with me that the media is twisting things around, they don't like that at all. They're being, you know, pawns in this political game. And I think that they're going to continue to try to offer straight information as much as they can. And they did that in the Worldwide Threat Assessment hearing. One of the things that was most important about that hearing, which got largely overlooked, I thought, was that the DNI said that China and Russia are now working more closely and strategically together than they ever have been, and that's of grave danger to the United States.
Yeah, I found that fascinating because we've been talking about a Sino-Soviet rift for years since the Soviets were the Soviets. And now working together, well, I mean, Venezuela we spoke about last week, they're on the same side there. They're on the same side in a lot of things. But let me bring our callers
and they're
this.
Filling that vacuum, yeah.
So yeah, we've got a lot of people who want to weigh in here. And Jonathan, I'm going to begin with you. Jonathan, welcome.
Oh, hi, thank you. I was just wondering if we do believe they were cheating on the treaty and we think it was dangerous to pull out, what should the response have been? What should we have done about it?
Important question, Michael McFaul.
I think we should have publicized our information, declassified the information that we had that they were violating the treaty, and then compelled them to, you know, they said they're not, and then have a negotiation around that. And, you know, it may not have led to an outcome. I want to be clear about that. And, you know, I was in the government when we ourselves assessed that they were violating the treaty. But it wasn't as if they were violating it and saying, you know, we don't care about this treaty anymore. The posture of the Putin administration was always, no, we're still within the confines of it. And so even that is limiting what they can do, right? I mean, that's how treaties work. And I would have liked to have seen that effort, not least because of the public relations piece of it, too. So right now in Europe, we look like we're the cowboys pulling out of this treaty prematurely. The Russians are going around saying we were trying to work with these crazy Americans, but, you know, obviously President Trump doesn't believe in arms control. And so we're losing on that front as well. So had we taken those other steps, I think if we eventually had to pull out, we would have done so in a better position.
Well, Michael McFaul, let me ask you to respond to a tweet I'm looking at from a listener who says, how does this fit into the theory that Trump is a puppet of Putin?
Putin's happy to be out of this treaty. I mean, formally he said what I just said, but now they are unlimited in what they can deploy, and I think this is a huge victory for Putin. This treaty, again, I urge people to learn the history of the signing of this treaty originally, because when it was originally signed, there were many hardliners in the Soviet Union, in the military, and in the KGB, from where Putin was working at the time, that thought this was a disastrous treaty for Soviet national security interests, right? Because it took away a deployment where they had strength and didn't control a deployment where we have strength. So these intermediate missiles that can't be on the ground, that's what the INF treaty says, but they can be in the sea. And that's where we have great strength, and the Soviet Union and Russia did not. So, it was a great, I remember at the time, it was like, wow, how did they get that treaty done? This is really good for America. And so people and the hardliners in Russia, they're glad to see it go.
Yeah, and let me read a comment from Daniel, who writes, Trump is playing to his base, who believe the intelligence community is part of the deep state conspiracy madness. His base is glad to pull out of all these treaties. They think tie our hands and limit our freedoms, and stay tuned for more treaties ending. Well, we are talking with Michael McFaul and Josh Meyer about national security measures, about the pullout of the treaty, or what seems to be the imminent pullout of the treaty over nuclear arms control, and also talking about intelligence agencies. And this is a fundraising period for this radio station, KQED Public Radio, your public radio station. For more information about how to support us, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we're going to go to more of your calls. Let me go to Raymond, who's joining us from Dublin. Raymond, you're on the air.
Good morning. Trump's pattern of pulling out of treaties is definitely disturbing. But however, I got to say, this particular treaty, as a voter, I'm much more concerned about a cyber war than an old school conventional arms race. The Cold War is over. And if other countries want to waste their money on nuclear weapons, let them go ahead. And I'll listen off the air. Thank you very much.
Okay. What about cyber war and all this, Josh Meyer? You want to comment?
It's a very good observation. And you'll remember that Trump, one of his first comments with regard to Putin, I think it was at Helsinki, was that he wanted to create a joint cyber effort with Russia so that we could prevent. In fact, the way it was worded was almost like that we could work together almost on cyber threats. So it was very vaguely worded. But, I think that was almost, laughably either simplistic or naive, and begs larger questions about his motives, because this is the country that basically nobody doubts the fact that they hacked our election, meddled with the election, maybe tipped the election to Trump's favor. And then now he's wanting to work with them on cybersecurity. So it is a huge issue. The U.S. government has been criticized by inspectors general and others for having no cohesive or coherent strategic policy on cyber. And between that and kowtowing to Russia on the issue, yes, it's very, very dangerous.
More your calls.
And China again, yeah.
Let me get Robert on next. Robert, thanks for waiting. Join us.
Yeah, my question is, do any of the other branches of government have a say-so? Can Congress rally and oppose it?
Michael McFaul?
No, they can't. I mean, that's an irony, in that they have to ratify the treaties for them to come into force, but the president has the authority to pull out. Now, politically, of course they can, and they should, and I hope there'll be hearings about the INF treaty and attention to it. And partly it's in response to your caller from Dublin, because I think there isn't an awareness that actually there is an arms race, and actually it does threaten you. Cyber, we need to do all at the same time. I agree that cyber is important too, but the deployment of these missiles, in Asia, for instance, if we have an arms race there, that will have implications for our alliance relationship with countries like Japan. Look at the Japanese government. They have criticized pulling out of this treaty as not being in their strategic interests. And also the new weapons that Russia is deploying threaten us here in the Bay Area. For instance, Mr. Putin revealed a few months ago they have a new torpedo, nuclear-armed torpedo, that can go hundreds of miles through the water and is designed to blow up on the shores of their enemies, parentheses, the United States, and create giant floods in bay-like areas. So, folks, whether we're watching it or not, the fact is these are very threatening things to our personal security, and so I would hope that the U.S. Congress would take a much more aggressive role in bringing greater awareness to these things that are happening. Just because President Trump is not talking about them does not mean they're not threatening the United States.
Do you think, Michael McFaul, when we talk about all this advancing of nuclear weaponry and moving forward with more nuclear weapons and new nuclear weapons and so forth, that this is going into somebody's pocketbook in a big way? I wonder if Russian oligarchs are getting some advantageous monetary things with this, or are we talking about maybe some billionaires here in the United States that need to be decided upon in terms of their profits?
Well, in Russia, Vladimir Putin for the last two decades has invested heavily in the modernization of their conventional and nuclear forces. And so their military-industrial complex has benefited financially without question. On the American side, it's a little more complicated who's an oligarch and who's part of the state.
Yeah, but somebody's getting very wealthy with this.
Well, and just the general point is, why is it in America's interest to build up weapons that we don't intend to use, that we just intend to preserve the peace? To me, that's a great reason to have arms control, is to spend less to achieve that same goal. And that just fundamental logic was the purpose of the New START Treaty. I was part of the team that negotiated the New START Treaty, and that was most certainly one of our motivations for trying to reduce the number of nuclear weapons in the world. Just by definition, listen to how easy that should be. We should want less nuclear weapons in the world, not more. Pulling out of the INF Treaty moves us in the wrong direction.
Oh, we're going to have to leave it there. Although, Josh Meyer, quick word from you. We are more imperiled, perhaps, than we have been in a long time. Would you assess things that way?
I would totally agree with that. I think during the worldwide threat assessment, every year they say things are more dangerous than before. But, the administration now, by alienating all of our allies, NATO, people like that, and embracing some of our enemies, including Russia and also China, I think it's a very perilous time for America.
Alas, we will have to leave it there. Thank you, Josh Meyer of Politico, and thank you, Michael McFaul of the Spoglia Institute. Another hour ahead, we're going to talk about drugs. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis. On view through April 14th, Blue and Yellow Corridor, an iconic work by Bruce Newman, realized on the very grounds where the artist conceived it.